For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
So I'm very happy to giving the talk tonight, Adam Tinkham, who's our former treasurer and former member of the board and longtime practitioner at Ancient Dragon. And thank you very much, Adam.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for coming. And thank you for chanting the Fukanza Zengi. I know it takes quite an effort. Here I thought I was having a very special period of Zazen when it seemed like the time between Laurel closing or coming in from greeter and Roy's getting the altar prepared seemed like it happened so fast. And then I realized that Taigen had shortened the period of Zazen 5 minutes. So, but still. it was an interesting experience. For me to ask for us to chant Fukanza Zengi is kind of ironic, because throughout my practice of 17 or so years, that chant in particular, somewhere around the bottom of page one, I'm like ready to go home. I'm just like, whew, this is going on and on and on. I had a little bit different experience with it tonight. Maybe because I was the one that had put in the request or the memorial service. But thank you. When I had emailed Taigen my idea for the talk, I said, here's the title, Zazen, Let's Be Real. And what I was thinking of and what Taigen was thinking were two very different things. His is actually much better. He said, you're going to talk about the transformative function of Zazen. And I was like, actually, that's not what I was thinking. I was coming more from how hard it is for Westerners to take on the physical posture of Zazen. And I think that in the end, I talk about both. I hope I do. Here and there in the talk, I'm going to be referring to the Fukanza Zengi, so I don't know. I'm going to quote it here, so if you would like to have your chant books out to see, please feel free. So my understanding from listening to Taigen talk about Dogen and this and the Fukanza Zengi was that he wrote it soon after returning from China to Japan. Maybe even it was the first thing that he put pen to paper or brush to paper. So I find it interesting then the line, it is never apart from this very place. What is the use of traveling around to practice? So maybe his having just been to China, he realized, or he had the thought, I could have just stayed in Japan, or I'm not exactly sure what. I hope that actually Taigen will, I'm sure he knows more about that. And we'll share that with this the end of the talk. Later we read that, consider the Buddha. Although he was wise at birth, the traces of his 6 years of upright sitting can yet be seen. As for Bodhidharma, although he had received the mind seal, his 9 years, that's right, nine, of facing a wall is celebrated still. If even the ancient sages were like this, how can we today dispense with wholehearted practice? So it seems like we're in for a lot of sitting if we're going to do this. And speaking for myself, without Zazen practice, I don't think I would do this practice at all. I listen frequently to podcasts on the San Francisco Zen Center website, as well as our own website. And it's amazing how many different teachers there are in the Suzuki Roshi lineage now. It really is amazing. And Taigen's teacher, Rev Anderson, who lives at Green Gulch Farm, I was listening to one of his talks recently, and he says, now, after 40 years of practice, I think Zazen includes such an exercise, and what he's talking about there is sitting upright, your hands in cosmic mudra, your tongue in the top of your mouth, your eyes mostly closed. Includes such an exercise, such a ritual. But my understanding of Zazen is completely, immeasurably, inconceivably, totally culminated enlightenment, which surrounds and supports somebody when they're sitting cross-legged in upright posture, paying attention to what's going on their consciousness. Zazen completely holds them and supports them as they're practicing that way. I especially like that last line. Zazen completely holds them and supports them as they're practicing that way. I started practicing at in North Carolina at the Chapel Hill Zen Center. The teacher there was and still is Pat Phelan, and that was roughly 17 years ago. I can still remember the first time I received Zazen instruction. It was in this small room off the back of what was once a house but had been turned into a practice center. And where we had Zazen instruction that day was also the library. And I can remember the gentleman, I can't remember his name, but he was the board president at the time. And he diligently went through the process with all of us of Zazen instruction. I was very, very eager, new Zen student. And also, I showed up with a huge amount of what I'll call physical karma. Some of you know that most of my life I have spent as an athlete, and I was a Division I athlete. And we put our bodies through the ringer in order to do that. My sport was soccer. So when I say physical karma, I mean, by that point in my life, when I had Zazen instruction, I had had several surgeries, all sorts of body imbalances, because my, you know, to excel at my sport, certain muscles are needed to be strong and quick, which might not be so useful for Zazen. And then, you know, all the bumps and bruises that come with that sort of life experience. So for me to try to take on Zazen, or for Zazen to come into my life, is a big ask. So I immediately signed up for a half-day sitting, not having any idea what I was getting into. As I said, I was very eager. And to the credit, and one thing I'll never forget about my first teacher, Pat Phelan, I don't think anyone else signed up. I think I was the only one that signed up. And she had one of the more senior members of the group come in, and we did Orioki breakfast in the Zendo, and he prepared it, and he also served it, and I was clueless to all of it. I was made a complete mess of the Orioki process. And I could tell, actually, one thing I did pick up on, I don't think he was too thrilled to be there on this Saturday or Sunday morning. But I had no idea, it was all brand new to me. And I think I'd forgotten everything from the Zazen instruction. I was looking up and around. I think it was raining a little bit. But it was still, you know, I was glad that I did it. Shortly after that half day sitting, the teacher, she asked me, you know, can you come see me sometime? let's have practice discussion. And one of the first things she asked me was, who gave you Zazen instruction? And I would just like to mention now, for her and every other teacher that I've been exposed to, deep bows for the immeasurable patience of all the teachers that, as I said, I've practiced with at Zen Center, because there have been a lot. And sometimes I think about the way I'm practicing, and I think if I was the teacher of me, I think I would have lost my patience. But that's not happened with Taigen and all the others before now. One thing also from the Chapel Hill Zen Center, there was a woman that used to come once a week. I think we had Wednesday night sitting there, like our Thursdays here, that were not, the attendance was not what it was on Sunday morning. And she used to always come once a week, and you wouldn't see her any other time. And I thought that's really peculiar how she comes once a week. And I asked her, I said, you know, and she said, well, it's physically very difficult for her to sit Zazen. And as I sat more and more, I said, well, did you try the bench? Did you try, you know, have you tried Burmese? Have you tried? She said, yeah, I've tried everything. Have you tried yoga? And I was like, maybe 12 years after I moved away from Chapel Hill, I went back there, and there she was. She was still practicing same way, once a week. And what I would say in regard to that is, not only was she a teacher for me, but oftentimes, and maybe some of you have had this experience, there are teachers around centers that you might not expect that would end up being your teacher. So continuing with Fukanza Zengi. For practicing Zen, a quiet room is suitable. At your sitting place, spread out a thick mat and put a cushion on it. Sit either in full lotus or half lotus. In the full lotus position, first place your right foot on your left thigh, then your left foot on your right thigh. In the half lotus, simply place your left foot on your right thigh. So wouldn't it be nice if that were the case? You could come in here and you could push one foot up on top of your thigh and somehow, like a pretzel, get the other one up there into full lotus and put your hands in the mudra, and then, you know, how many ever minutes later, the bell rings and you stand up easily, do walking meditation, and then when the next period comes, do the same thing. And then if it's an all-day sitting, you do it all day. If it's a five-day sitting, you do it for 5 days. But I don't think that's how it works for most of us. Most of us don't grow up sitting on the floor. I didn't. And there's been plenty written about it, especially lately, about chair sitting and all the limitations. And I'm not saying when you come here you can't sit on a chair. I'm just saying most of us grow up in Western schools sitting on chairs throughout the day, and it does things to your body, to your physiology. After the Chapel Hill Zen Center, I moved to Tel Sahara. I was there for a summer, which is not, Tel Sahara is not functioning as a monastery at that time. You still get to sit in the morning, and if you'd like, in the middle of the day and in the evening. And there are a lot of dedicated students there during the summer. I was there for 6 months, and I continued my great effort to be the perfect Zen student. Then I moved to San Francisco Zen Center, came out of the valley, over the mountain, into the city. And what I was doing here was I was sitting like, sort of like now, quarter lotus, half lotus, Burmese. When my right knee gave out, I would use the left one. When the left knee was done, I'd go back to the right. I was just finding, anyway, I was using the Seiza bench for a while. And this is how I was going through it. Sat sessions of various lengths. The longest was 7 days. I really thought, you know, I was on the path. And people used to say to me, well, doesn't it get easier in the third and fourth day? I would say, I'm having so much pain. And they're like, well, wait till about day three or four, it will get better. Not for me. And then something started to shift. I started being more honest about my physical limitations. Because, you know, in sport, it's all about, what is that famous saying, no pain, no gain. You're always competing to be the top. And there's always someone trying, you know, so I figured, or basically I was applying that same mind to my Zen practice. By the end of my 2 years at City Center, I was doing lying down Zazen, because I'd just given up. So if you've ever been to City Center, there's a long entrance way that leads to the, what's the word for the?
The gaitan, the outer hall.
Yeah, the gaitan. That before you even get into a very beautiful basement zendo. And I was just lying. I was taking three cushions, lying, and people are, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm all right." And as I said, that was toward the end of my time at City Center. Just one little anecdote. Basically, when I was getting ready to move out of City Center, one of the senior priests said to me, "You know, during Sesshin, if you need to miss a period, you can just stay in your room." I was like, "What? You can't?" You know, that was news to me. Fast forward a number of years later, and I'm living and working in Chicago, and before Ancient Dragon was on Irving Park Road, we practiced on Fullerton at the Seneca Retreat Center. And Taigen and I had a practice discussion, not actually there, it was in one of the houses of a former member of Ancient Dragon. And Taigen said, "You know, it's not a sitting contest." And that was news to me. And it was very helpful to hear that it wasn't a sitting contest. Here's something from Taigen's Zen questions. "As for discomfort in zazen, trying to just sit through excruciating pain is not necessary or helpful. However, it is vital to sometimes go beyond your idea of your comfort zone in zazen, to be willing to feel a little discomfort in your knee or your shoulder or lower back or in your heart. Bringing awareness to the details of your posture, there is an opening or capacity, a letting go of some idea of how your body should be, and a willingness to tolerate some further level of discomfort. This is exactly the transformative function in your body. This is a yogic practice to become more flexible physically as well as mentally." And I think we all know it is a very delicate balance. The abbot of the Berkeley Zen Center, Sojin Mel Weitzman, was interviewed recently about the early days of practicing with Suzuki Roshi, because he was there. "Zazen was a lot about how to be one with the pain so that you are not creating opposition. As long as there is no opposition, there is no problem. When you create opposition, I want something different. I want it to change. I want to get out of there or escape. Then it becomes a problem." A later practice discussion Taigen and I were having in his first apartment in Chicago, he asked me how much I sit at home. And I think I said 3 or 4 times a week, which wasn't true. More like, you know, 2, probably. 2 is a lot different than 3 or 4. For those of you that have consistent home practices. And since I've subsequently found out but, you know, his asking about that, my home practice, and I think when I said three or four, he said, oh, okay, well, that's good. I started then to make more effort to sit at home. So I, as they say in Fukan Zazengi, spread out a thick mat and put a cushion on it. And something started to shift, because I made sure to sit when I was well rested and not longer than was really than was comfortable. And for me, that usually was like 20 minutes, 25 minutes. And it made quite a difference in my practice overall. Most of you know I've been coming to Ancient Dragon for a while, although some of you might not, because my attendance is about once a week, sometimes less than that. And during this time of, well, I started practicing before Taigen moved here with this group. I've seen a lot of people come to Ancient Dragon, and I've seen a lot of people go. And as a treasurer, former treasurer, you also become more familiar with names in that role. And I often think about why people stop coming. I mean, I know sometimes, like, Will is getting ready to move soon, and sometimes people, it's just, and other times people choose to stop coming. And I often think about those people and hope that Zazen will leave Ancient Dragon with them. As necessary and supportive as it is to come here to sit with everyone, I think that a home practice is crucial for staying with this over time. I'm originally from Indiana, and I heard this John Cougar song recently, and John Cougar's also a Hoosier, in case you didn't know. And I was just looking for a way. There's this line in the song I just couldn't shake after I heard it. And I've heard the song many times. And I was looking for a way to bring it into this talk, so here it comes. So he says, oh yeah, life goes on long after the thrill of living is gone. And it's almost hard to say it without singing it, for me. Oh yeah, life goes on long after the thrill of living is gone. And the Fukan Zazengi says, going forward is an everyday affair. After all, going forward is an everyday affair. And what I say is that I'm extremely grateful to have found this practice of which Zazen is inseparable. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Adam. Very, I think, helpful, practical, honest talk. Comments, responses, questions? Anyone, please feel free.
I thought you were going to quote It hurts so good. I just love your talk, Adam. Thank you so much. And I, too, struggle with pain. And one of the things I've been doing this last year is switching to walking practice for that very reason, just because my knees are old and decrepit and there's only so much they can do. And I mean, I do think we need to try to preserve the essence of our sitting, whether we're literally sitting or not. And it's sad to think of people leaving the practice because of that. And so it's wonderful to raise our awareness of it. And I hope people will listen to it on the on the website, because I think it's a really, really common discouragement to people.
Yeah, at one point, you know, you described very well your early attitude towards sitting, and I think, I don't know if that's still so common. It used to be in the early days of Macho Zen, and maybe some people still have that attitude that this is sort of a kind of competitive athletic endeavor, you know, to see who, you know, it used to be whoever could sit in the most difficult posture for the longest without moving was the most enlightened, or some nonsense. Anyway, and you know, there's some kind of feeling of wanting to sit beautifully or something, but walking is a wonderful practice. So, you know, in terms of home practice, I think it's fine to sit at home for 20 minutes or 30 minutes or 10 minutes and then get up and walk for 10 minutes or 20 minutes. And to, you know, so, and here, you know, I say regularly in meditation instruction, if you need to move and adjust your posture, do that, or if you need to use a chair, do that. The pain in and of itself isn't the point. So I appreciate your sharing that. Other comments or questions or responses? Yes, Will.
Yes, I'm interested in something that Adam mentioned early on and said he hoped you'd follow up on. I feel like Dogen and Fugen Zazengi and is part of a long tradition of people who've gone to the top of some mountain, come back and told me I don't need to go.
Yeah. There's lots of cases of that in the tradition. There's a guy named Bankei. Don't any of you know, have any of you heard of Bankei? A great Japanese master who, he's one of the great old masters who, and there's a number of them who, about whom this is said, who sat so hard and so intensely that he had boils on his butt, literally. But then when he was teaching, he said, you don't need to do anything special. Just realize that when a dog barks outside and you hear it, you don't have to think about what is that. It's just this unborn Buddha mind knows immediately. Before you say the word dog, or before you say the word bird when a bird sings, just that there's this unborn mind, and just to you still, so that kind of practice, the danger is to not practice at all. So Dogen emphasizes you do need zazen, and as Adam said, but it's not about reaching some higher state of being, or you know, it's not an athletic contest.
But in terms of his going to China, did he ultimately think you don't need to go to China? Did he regret going to China?
I don't know that he regretted it, but he came back and said, you know, nobody else needs to do that. You know, he had done it. Some of his disciples ended up going, a few of them, I think, but. And you know, practically for us, some of you know, some of you know, Jeremy's gone to Tassajara and done a practice period. Would you tell people to not do that?
Yeah, well, I actually feel the same way that Dogen feels of why wander around when practice is right here?
Yeah.
I'd go back to Tassanar right now if I could. You know, but practice is here.
Yeah, practice is here. You know, so for our Sangha, practically speaking, for people who are, you know, kind of guiding others, or for priests or for lay people who are leaders, I think it's good to do some of that kind of practice. It doesn't have to be a whole Tassanar practice period, but I think having some taste of that kind of practice is helpful for some people. But it's not something everybody has to do at all. You know, we're experimenting with how do we find a way to really bring practice into our lives as lay people in Chicago, you know, and so for some people who come here regularly don't ever come to all-day sittings. Some people do, you know, and for some of you, I think you might find it interesting and helpful. I think it's very individual. The point is, how do we bring the sense of, I don't know what you would call it, Adam, connectedness or wholeness or whatever, how do we bring that into our everyday activity? How would you describe that for you? That value from Zazen.
For me, it's sitting Zazen.
Okay.
I mean, I run a lot, which is a pretty meditative practice. But if I number of days go by at home and I'm not sitting even for 20 minutes, or I notice it, the quality of my life experience suffers. I'm more preoccupied with what's out there, putting less value in what's right here. I notice it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jeremy.
You know, I liked your mentioning of the woman who was just kind of coming back.
Yeah.
Again and again. It's so fierce, such a fierce practice. We were talking about kind of before about why I travel to distant lands. I feel like that's a person, what I think of that story is that it's a person who really understands what it means to not have to go somewhere else to practice. She's doing her practice, you know, what she can do with her body and taking care of herself. I just want to say, I really liked your job too.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
So, yes, Jerry, last comment.
I really liked your comment when they said, well, if you want to in Sushin, you could take a period and stay in your room. I have a lot of moments of because, you know, when I started in a very fierce sort of, you know, competition, so it was that way where, you know, whoever could sit the longest, stillest, won the prize. So when I came here, there's a lot of moments when I think, it's actually been beneficial because in a way I kind of like the fierce way. But what I'm finding in the sort of softer way is it's easier to incorporate than my everyday life.
Yeah.
My everyday life isn't all that fierce. And so, somehow it just flows in more naturally. I do kind of worry, though, that, you know, it's too soft. I'm not practicing. Here's a little, here's a little. So there's sort of a balance there you got to get to.
Yeah, good. So let me end by just responding to Jerry that's right, that I believe in, you know, bringing it into everyday activity and sustaining it. But yeah, it does. There has to be some attention. It's not just falling asleep. It's not just, you know, it's gentle, but it's, you know, we're paying attention. And so there has to be a little bit of an edge there. So finding that balance is difficult. So you're right, but it's not about, and we're each a little bit different. So in some ways, some of us need a little more push than others. And, you know, partly it's my job to push you a little bit if you need it, but it's also your job to let me know if you need to be pushed. So, you know, together we kind of find our way. So anyway, thank you very much, Adam. Wonderful talk and very practical, and we'll continue. But first we'll chant the closing Bodhisattva vows.
Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to realize it.